Hi everyone, and thanks for listening to Lit Radio Podcast. I'm Teja, and today I'm joined by John Childress. We'll talk about his book, Culture 4.0, The Future of Corporate Culture. John has been at the forefront of corporate culture for more than 45 years. As co-founder and CEO of the first international leadership and culture consulting firm, he has advised global corporations, boards, and government leaders. His pioneering work on safety culture at Three Mile Island after the 1979 nuclear accident shaped the principles still used today to build high-performance, resilient organizations. Culture 4.0 is the first systematic framework for building organizations that can thrive in a post-pandemic, AI-driven, socially connected, and economically uncertain world. Hi, John. It's a great pleasure to have you with us on Lit Radio Podcast. How are you doing today?
Thank you very much, Teja. I've been looking forward to this because I think you've written down some interesting questions and there's a lot to say about culture.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm also looking forward to the conversation. So my first question is, why you decided to write the book Culture 4.0?
Well, that's a very interesting story, actually. I've been studying culture for, it's getting on to be 40 years now. And I've written five or six books about leadership and culture. And I kind of figured I had said everything that there was to say, or at least I knew. And I was talking to an old client about a year ago who has since retired. And he said to me something profound. He said, John, I am certainly glad I'm not a chief executive anymore in this day and age, because there's so many things happening in the world that are impacting our company and our culture. And I started thinking about that. And then I asked him, and he rattled off a litany of things: AI, working from home, social media, cybersecurity. I mean, just a ton of things. And I thought, wow, all those things are impacting company cultures and how people are engaged and how they perform at work. So I thought, I think I better do some research.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we talk more about that, and because this is a book podcast, could you let us know what was the writing process like? What was it like to write this book?
Writing a book is, it is a process. It's a task. And I think I break it up into four or five elements. Number one is just getting the idea, getting the idea organized in my mind. So having an outline. Number two is the research. And this book took a lot of research. It took almost a year of research. And then there's the writing. And then there's the editing and the fact checking, which is, to be honest, the part I hate the most, because you have to be very, very focused and detailed. But it was an interesting book to write because I learned so much about what's going on in the world and what's impacting organizations and their employees.
Yeah, so it was also a learning experience for you as well, writing that book.
Yeah, I think I have a much better sense of appreciation for the challenges now. And I was a CEO, the world was pretty stable. I mean, there weren't as many rapid changes, not as much rapid technology change for sure. Nowadays, it seems like the image I have is of I was watching an old black and white Japanese movie the other day, and the leader of this outlaw gang was captured and he was brought before the shogun. And there were 100 archers there, and they all fired their arrows at once, and the guy looked like a pincushion. He was just, and that image stuck in my mind. That must be what it's like to be a CEO and a business leader nowadays with all these things coming at you. So I had to write a book to help people understand what those external and internal f causal factors or forces are, and how to best deal with them.
Yeah, absolutely. We live in such an uncertain world with so many disruptions and something new happening every day. So it's very, very, very difficult. Before we discuss the different factors that are affecting corporate culture today, could you let's start with why a corporate culture is so important in the first place? Why is it something that leaders should really be thinking about?
I think the best way to describe that is through an analogy. Imagine you've got a Ferrari and it's sitting there. It's got a huge engine. It's got tires that are appropriate for the race coming up. And everything's ready, and you jump in and you turn on the ignition and nothing happens. And the reason is there's no fuel. And I see corporate culture as the fuel behind a corporate strategy, behind the execution, behind competitive advantage, behind employee engagement. It's really the driver of all of the things that power an organization and that engage people as well.
Yeah. And obviously, in the book, you talk about culture 4.0, but before that, we've got different stages of corporate culture, and obviously, the evolution of corporate culture. So, before we now go into discussing this new phase, could you briefly talk us through the different stages of the evolution of corporate culture up until the stage that we are at now?
Yeah, it's been an interesting concept to evolve in business. And it began in the 1950s with a psychologist by the name of Elliot Jacks. And he was looking at a manufacturing company. And he realized that while there's plans and machines and equipment, what really made things work was the people. And he studied how the people behaved. He studied their level of engagement. And that's the first time that the term corporate culture arose. So it came up in the 1950s. Between the 1950s and 1980, there wasn't much done about it. It was seen as a soft issue. Okay. And then in the 1980s, the early 1980s, two McKinsey consultants, Tom Peters and Bob Waterman, wrote a seminal book called In Search of Excellence. And that book hit the boardrooms like a thundercloud. I mean, it talked about vision, values, engagement, and it was based on some fairly good research showing that employee engagement, vision, values had a great impact on performance. And they showed those organizations who were succeeding and those who were failing and how they had a very different culture. Okay. And that really excited a lot of interest in corporate culture, because it was a way to, in some people's minds, it was a way to understand business success. So it was not all about technology. It was not all about equipment. It was not all about strategy. There was a people factor as well. And then between 2000 and 2020, the corporate culture movement moved into data. And it became a digital concept where people were gathering data through employee surveys, opinion polls, data on HR performance, business performance, people performance, and trying to match that with what causes a successful company. So it became a very data-driven, and there were, believe it or not, there are over 80 corporate culture assessments, all different, all which tells me that while you can measure something, maybe you're not measuring the right things. And that brings us up to what I call culture 4.0. So we went through culture 1.0, culture 2.0, culture 3.0, which was data. And now we're at a time where we need to look beyond just the internal walls of the organization. We need to look at all the external things that are causing people to behave. The concept of culture is very simple. Employee behavior drives results. That's an interesting concept, but what's even more important and what culture 4.0 is about is what actually causes people to behave certain ways. We know behavior impacts outcomes, but what causes people to behave? What is it inside the organization or the external things that are going on in the world that causes people to either be productive or unproductive, engaged or not engaged? And so 4.0 takes a ecosystem view, looking at the entire ecosystem and the things that impact people's behavior, which then, of course, impacts results. So it's a way of mapping and visually understanding the internal and the external causal factors. And if you understand those, if you can map them and see them and understand how they impact people, then you can make changes. If you don't, then you just do more surveys and you put up free food and pool tables and bean bags and hope that you improve the engagement. Well, that's not going to work.
Yeah, absolutely. So culture 4.0, it is really the first time that we are really looking at the factors influencing people and what influences their performance, really. That's not something we did in the past three stages of the evolution. Do you think that's the main thing that differentiates the stages?
Yeah, I think what's very different is we're looking at the causal factors and not just what the culture is, not just using data to measure the culture, but actually determining what causes the culture.
Absolutely, yeah. And let's talk about those causes now. So obviously in the book you've discussed a lot of different factors impacting corporate culture. Unfortunately, we won't have time to go through all of them now, but I would like to discuss some of the biggest issues we are
Sure.
facing in the world today. Starting with obviously in 2020, we had the COVID pandemic, and that changed the way we worked, and it still continues to change the ways we are working. So the main thing being obviously now people are working from home or working or hybrid working. So, and obviously in the past we were used to having all of us working together in an office, and that's not the case anymore. And how is that really impacting the corporate culture?
Well, I think that was the beginning of my thinking about we need to look outside the organization. The global pandemic changed things dramatically, and that genie is out of the bottle, as they say. It's not going to go back in. I think I'll start by answering your question with a quote that is in the, it's actually chapter one of the book, which is Working from Home. And it says, remote work is not about where you are. It's about what you can achieve no matter where you are. So it's really changed the dynamic from looking at activity-based behaviors to outcome-based behavior. So you can have an outcome wherever you are. Before the pandemic and before we moved into working from home, employees and managers had this relationship where the manager checked on the activities and they managed and they measured through activity. What time you show up? Do you clock in? Do you clock out? How productive are you during that time period? Nowadays, because of remote work and working from home, that dynamic has to change to not just activity-based management, but outcome-based. Are you producing, no matter what time of day, no matter where you are you producing the kind of things that are required for that job? And that's been the biggest shift. The second thing is it's also created a two-tier culture system, which is not always positive. There are those who work remotely or work from home, and there are those who have to be in the office or the factory. And quite honestly, those working in the business, in the organization, get more visibility. And the data shows that they are prone to more advances. They get more opportunities because they're in sight. So good organizations who are handling this now have to figure out ways to make that a seamless team, those working from home and those inside. And so there's a lot of policy changes that need to be made, which I review in my book. A lot of organizations, Microsoft, Salesforce, etc., have designed practices to help those people who work remotely be just as acknowledged and just as appreciated and just as high up on the promotional calendar as anybody else. The second thing is that there's no one right way. Every organization has a different way of dealing with this factor of remote work, working from home. And the smart companies are looking at the jobs and not just the approach. So some jobs you can do two days in the office, 3 days at home. Some jobs you can do all remotely. Some jobs have to be in. So they're designing it around the role and the jobs to be done rather than just a blanket policy. And I think that is a best practice that a lot of organizations need to step back and think about.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. And then the other big issue that we are seeing in the world a lot at the moment, and it's something that everyone is talking about, is obviously artificial intelligence. And that, of course, is also impacting organizations and corporate culture. So could you talk to us a little bit more about what that impact is?
Yeah, well, it has had a great impact. It is having a great impact, and it will continue to have a great impact because the technology is moving so fast. There's a great quote I start this particular chapter in my book with. It says, "Technology without culture, leadership, and trust merely creates complexity at scale." So we can't just look at it as a AI is really a They're kind of going, people tend to be going about it in the wrong way. They're investing in algorithms, they're investing in data infrastructure, systems integration. But the real transformation is really happening on the cultural realm. How is this impacting people? And the great fear of a lot of employees is that my job is going to be irrelevant and that I'm not going to be important anymore. For example, AI can now diagnose medical conditions more accurately than a well-trained, experienced physician. Does that make them less important? Those companies that are dealing with that and making it work are integrating and making AI a team member and not a replacement for people's skills. In other words, what kind of a. Imagine this. Imagine that you have a whole team at your beck and call. You can have a spreadsheet accountant, you can have a comms person, you can have a designer. You have your own team 24/7. So it's not replacing you, it's giving you that total flexibility. to do things efficiently, effectively, that you wouldn't be able to do on your own, and quicker, and probably more accurately as well. So shifting from a tool to team members, I think that's the big cultural shift that is happening. The other thing is that the fact is, I guess the dark side of AI is that there are going to be some layoffs, or those organizations who are dealing with it effectively are not necessarily laying off, but they're repurposing and retraining and refocusing people. There is a great quote in my book that I really like. It says, AI will probably not replace you, but someone with AI skills probably will. And I think that's the big takeaway, is that we need to embrace this. I mean, I can remember when the I'm old enough to remember when the computer came along. And those who resisted typing into a keyboard and lugging around a laptop that was the size of a suitcase then, they didn't progress as well as those who engaged with it, learned, went back to school and learned to type and learned to code, and then it just became easier and easier. So adopting a new technology is not necessarily a replacement, it is an enhancement. And the problem is, it's moving so fast, I don't have a crystal ball. I mean, I don't know where it's going, but I do know that in order to integrate it into your culture, you need to see it as an enhancement and not a replacement.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like what you're saying about seeing AI as a teammate rather than a replacement for people's skills, which yeah, I think is very essential at this time. And then another quite unique thing we're dealing with at the moment is that we've got the Gen Z who they have been entering the workforce in the past few years, and they've been demanding some very different ways of working. And on top of that, at the moment, very uniquely, we might have up to five different generations working together. So how does all of that impact corporate culture, having that different new generation, but also all of those different generations working in one place together?
Well, it is definitely a challenge. First thing I'd like to mention, and it sort of begins this particular chapter in my book, is that this Generation Z, the difference, they are very different from particularly my generation. They're actually responding to the same technological, social, and economic forces that are happening right now in modern life. They aren't their expectations are not generational perks, or they're actually logical responses to a changing world. So those people who are interacting with Generation Z have a lot to learn, because they are in touch with how the world is changing. The world is changing much faster than businesses. Technology is changing much faster than organizational structures. So they've got a good handle on how to utilize all of these changes. So we need to look at it not as a bunch of different people who have expectations of free time and all of that, but they can be leading the way in the organizations. Generation Z is also has a great deal of focus on purpose. So it's not just business for making money, it's business for having a positive purpose that impacts society. Of course, everybody understands that you have to make a profit and you got to do business, but it needs to be balanced, and particularly in this time and age when technology has created a very negative impact on the environment. Having an organization filled with purpose has a great deal of draw for this new generation. In fact, there's some research statistics that something like 70% of new employees won't work at a business where they're not clear that it has a positive purpose. And a lot of young employees change businesses because of not only the culture, but lack of a positive purpose in the business. So there is a dynamic force being there. The fact that there are four or five generations working together, I think that's great. I think it brings so much diverse thought and so many different ideas and so many different experiences together, focused on the business problem, focused on the customer, focused on the application of technology, focused on productivity, focused on innovation. Sameness doesn't create innovation. Sameness doesn't make changes, but a diverse workforce, if they will respect and appreciate each other's points of view, is a very powerful, positive force inside a business. And so I look at it as a great thing. I would love to be working in an organization now where there are five different generations. It would be so interesting, and so many new ideas and so many different ways of looking at things. It also makes the job of leadership that much more not only difficult, but also interesting. The command and control type in which culture 1.0 kind of grew up in, the command and control leadership culture is just not going to work with five different generations going on. So, excuse me, we need to be able to figure out as leaders, how do we listen? How do we understand? How do we meld all of these new points of view and ideas into ways that can enhance our business and can support our purpose and our vision and our values?
Absolutely.
It's a big challenge.
It is. It definitely is. And that's where the role of middle management comes in. Because, yeah, we know in a lot of companies, and we've heard of stories where people are leaving a company just because of bad and toxic management. So, yeah, managers play a huge role in corporate culture. So, how does middle management need to evolve to meet the demands of culture 4.0?
This is a real interesting part, and it took me a long time to research and try and get a view of it because middle management is often ignored. There's a lot of impact on employees and employee engagement, employee surveys, and there's a lot of leadership courses and leadership developments for senior managers. But middle management is kind of that invisible force. And yet they're extremely important. So they're going to have to, like everybody else in a business nowadays, in an organization, they're going to have to evolve. They're going to have to change the way they do in order to handle all of these external forces and all of these internal causal factors. You're absolutely right. Managers have a great impact on the employee. And I think that quote is really a good one. Employees don't leave companies, they leave poor managers. So there's also a quote in my book that I really like that frames this up in terms of how they're going to have to change. And one employee said, "I saw my manager more during the 3 hours of the hiring interview than I have in the last 3 years." So managers are going to have to learn to engage and not just audit or inspect or quote manage work. They're going to have to engage with employees to try and figure out, particularly with the different generations, they're the ones closest. they're going to have to figure out how do we get the best out of not only the individual, but out of the team, because people are mobile and they will leave and they can go, and it costs a tremendous amount to rehire somebody than it does to really engage with them on a regular basis. The other thing that is important is they're going to have to be people developers. You can't expect HR to do all of the development. The manager is closest to the individual. They're going to have to set up a dialogue and an understanding of what that person wants and what they need in terms of their skill development, their personal development, their professional development. You cannot leave that to HR policies because it doesn't cover generational differences. It doesn't cover individual differences. The sad fact is that most middle managers are still blocking cultural development. They just haven't gotten, nobody sat them down and helped them understand that this is a whole new ball game. It's a whole new way to work. So there needs to be much more professional personal development given to middle managers, because I think they have a tremendous role in this new age of change.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then lastly, John, I've got one. It's a big question. I know that. And it's for leaders. So, how can they build effective corporate cultures in the Culture 4.0 era? I know it might not be able to cover everything now, but what are the fundamentals that they should really make sure they don't mess up?
It's a big question, but I think we can answer that. They're going to have to first begin with a mindset and an understanding that culture impacts business performance. So you've got to put as much emphasis on culture as you do on technology, finance, strategy, competitive advantage. They're all equally important. So if you start with that mindset, then what leaders need to do is understand what are the causal factors, what are causing people to either be engaged or disengaged, to be productive or non-productive, or I shouldn't say non-productive, less productive. What's driving innovation? What's creating risk? So they need to really step back and work with the whole management team and understand what are the causal factors. What is causing our culture to be a certain way? It's not just good enough to measure it. You need to understand what causes it. And that's the second thing. Once you understand the causal factors, you can find those that have the greatest impact. You can use data, you can use best practices. There's a lot of research on things like hiring. Hiring practices have a great impact on the culture. Compensation practices have a great impact on the culture. Policies, compliance, leadership, management, peer pressure, all those things. If you really understand that they're causal factors, then you can start looking at how do we improve those. And I think the last thing is you have to be aware of all of the external things that are happening in the world that impact your business. And we've talked about most of the, or at least the big ones, AI. What we didn't talk about is social media. Social media makes your culture visible to the external world, whereas before it was only internal. The whole world knows your culture by now through Glassdoor or TikTok or whatever. What is whispered in the boardroom is trending by noon on social media. So you've got to really understand that these things are impacting your organization and develop a sensitivity and policies and practices and leadership skills in order to kind of deal with them. So I guess that's how I would address leaders. You've got a big job now. It's not just thinking of a strategy and allowing the company to deliver on that, you've got to look at all of those other external and internal impacts. That makes sense?
It absolutely does. But yeah, I'm sure it sounds easier than it is in reality. But yeah, it's a lot of work that leaders really need to undertake to make sure we get it right.
I think it reminds me of the old Chinese curse, may you live in changing times.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not an easy world to live in at the moment, but yeah, we should make the best out of it as leaders. But thank you very much, John, for your time today. It was very interesting to discuss your book, Culture 4.0, and the different insights that you have. Obviously, we couldn't really cover a big part of the book, and so I encourage our listeners to grab a copy and read it for themselves. But thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. I've enjoyed all my interactions with you and Lyd. So,
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we're very happy to hear that. Thank you, John.
you're welcome.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you keep an eye on our social media at Lyd Publishing on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lyd Radio Podcast.